You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Folks, Mother's Day is around the corner, and let me talk to you about 1-800-Flowers. I can't wait. Every year, it's a tradition. I send stuff to my mother, my mother-in-law, and my wife because they are three amazing moms. They're better than all your moms out there. You think you have good moms? No, I have good moms in my life. I'm just kidding. This was a little harsh. I'm sure you guys all have good moms too. From your mom to the mother of your children and all the moms in between, this Mother's Day, give back to the ones that have given you everything. 1-800-Flowers helps you celebrate all amazing moms, from homemade bouquets, sweet treats, gourmet food, and one-of-a-kind gifts, ordered easily and delivered fresh. For a limited time, you can save up to 40% off Mother's Day bestsellers at 1-800-Flowers.com/Dan. Don't wait. Order today and save up to 40% at 1-800-Flowers.com/Dan.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey, will you let me into your world for a minute?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sorry if I sound low. I'll speak up. I'm picking up a bunch of pens that I dropped. Go ahead.
Did you plan on Stu doing what he did as part of the show?
The cameo? No, we can talk about that. I'm super embarrassed by that.
No, but are you really, or is it the show?
Oh, I'm really. This is
because in my mind, and I'm not a judger, and you know me, I want to have fun with shows. I don't like that. If you guys planned that,
no, I trust. Well, everyone else is doing it. This is clearly just a Sugat thing, but he's representing.
What do you mean everyone else is doing it?
Well, everyone else is doing Cameo the right way on the show.
No. That's what I'm saying. That's why I thought maybe it was part of a show to give you a foil to make fun of Cameo. But people spend their money.
Yeah.
So for me, it's... And you don't get your money back, by the way.
No, you just get the dollar. Yeah, you get the credit of the dollar value of what he was when you ordered him. So you can't even afford him now. It's bullshit. We're gonna drag him today. It's bad. Dan's himself is just reaching out to people, doing private cameos for people as a means to apologize. It's bullshit. And we told him the second that he started signing up and putting it off. I'm like, okay, have you started recording? No, I'm going to do it this weekend. You had 300 requests. It's just
impossible.
So you were
serious.
Yeah.
So you tell me the truth because I don't want to get ahead of it today.
Yeah, he f***ed up. He's a victim of his own laziness. He underestimated, I guess, the demand. And his price got inflated, and I think he just started grabbing the more expensive ones, not really realizing. Now he says he's going to make them up for free. I don't know how he's going to do that. I also don't believe him. He's lost all credibility with me in this regard, and I'm genuinely embarrassed by it. Like we were texting before, there's a fine line between doing something cute on brand that, look, I'm not content starved. I prefer everything to go well. But if he's going to screw one or two up, that's good. That's good fodder for the show. I'm not going to lie.
But, I agree.
But 300?
Okay, we're on the same page.
300?
One or two you make up with a private call that people laugh at, and all of a sudden it becomes a great part of the show. What's happening now is not. I think, did Cameo restrict him, by the way?
I think he's working stuff out. I listened to an interview. By the way, this is a podcast. We're going to keep some of this organic banter in the podcast. Welcome, everybody, to the Local Hour with David Sampson. Because David, out of curiosity, asked me something that's been certainly on the front of my mind, which at a time for things to be at the front of my mind, this is not a good one for Sugats to pull this shit. Sugats joined Cameo and then got his Ponzi scheme going where he got everyone else under the Dan Le Batard show with Sugats' umbrella under his, so he gets a chunk out of everybody else. Sugats came in at $39, and the request came pouring in because our fan base is incredible, and the price kept going up naturally. Now Sugatz has 7 days to fulfill all orders. Clock immediately starts ticking on the early request. Days go by. Sugatz, have you started doing Cameo? No. You know, the normal Sugatz bullshit of him being lazy and underestimating exactly how time-consuming this would be. Come the weekend, I see maybe one, maybe two, handful of Sugatz cameos making their way on Twitter, and our fan base have been posting all of these, so I know something is up. Sure as shit, the cameos start expiring, and I promise I'm not going to be too redundant in this because I know Dan's going to have something to say, and Cameo, God knows Cameo's had plenty of advertising on our show from all of this, but Sugatz's bottom line, letting the cheaper requests lapse, seemingly taking the more expensive ones. When they lapse, you get a refund, but not a refund in the conventional sense. You get credits back. So people that got in early on the Sugatz, arguably the biggest fans of Sugatz because they got in immediately, don't have a Cameo from Sugatz, get $39 in credit back from Cameo, and $39 does not get you Sugatz now. I think he's somewhere around the neighborhood of $150. So it's just absurd. I know he always wins because the premise, the buy-in, when you listen to this show, is Sugatz is a scoundrel. So it affords him something. But there is a fine line between being cute and being Sugatz-y and ripping our fans off. And we're not having it, David. We're not. I promise you. We're doing what we can to make it up to these fine people. Dan, who doesn't have time for Cameo, much like myself, is actually reaching out to every single person that emails or DMs him saying, hey, this happened to me. Dan is just doing personalized cameos for free out of the shame that Sugatz has caused.
By the way, by saying that, you're now going to make it worse because now people are going to reach out to Dan looking for free single cameos. I actually, as a veteran of your show, I thought for a moment that maybe you were doing this for people who get the show. And I, who always go right to the line so often that I step over it from time to time because it obviously makes me smile to do that, I thought it was not in good taste because it's one thing to make people laugh. It's one thing to have a foil on the show. It's one thing to not do one or two. And then Stu could have just privately called them and said, hey, you're part of a funny skit we're doing. But it got so bad that to me, it wasn't funny. So I texted you and we communicate a bit off camera, but not a lot. And I felt compelled because if there were something I was missing, I wanted to know it. I wanted to be on the inside of the mystery before I took a stance because I find it to be unacceptable to do that. Now, people may laugh, and I'm giving you your next question, which is you ripped people off all the time. They bought season tickets from you, and you would then trade players. You're the king of this.
I'm glad you don't have this blind spot.
No, it's not a blind spot at all. I find it to be absolutely hysterical that you would think that I am, what's the word when you act hypocritical? You would think I'm hypocritical, but no, I find it very different when someone buys a ticket to a game where I promise to give you 9 players, 9 innings with a chance of winning or at least of being entertained with a cold hot dog if we even have them in stock. Cameo to me is a different contract between the person on Cameo and the person requesting the Cameo. I do not view them the same, but I'm willing to listen if you were about to come down on me hard.
I'm not coming down on you. And honestly, what Sugatz is doing is a reflection on you. It's a reflection on everybody associated with us. There's a lot of people associated with us that have made their way on Cameo. I saw Old Money Charlie is on Cameo now. And they're all part of this universe that Sugatz has his name slapped on. Credit to everyone else in our universe that has done great with this. I've seen so many Billy ones come across my timeline, and Billy just like plays his characters on it. It's great stuff. Spend your money on them. Because Lord knows Sugatz is getting a cut of it anyways. Sugatz has embarrassed us. It's not a good look, and we're going to work to rectify it. I promise you that. I know you're on Cameo, David. What is the demand for David Samson? I'm curious. Are there people?
Stu does not get a cut, by the way. Yeah, and when I do cameos, people generally ask me, it's very strange, my Cameo world. people want nothing personal segments on Cameo. So they want like a private segment where they'll ask a question. You know, I get the occasional birthdays and congratulations with graduations and do my fantasy football draft and things like that. But often it's a question on a topic of sports or business, and people just want sort of a one-on-one. So my cameos can be like 4 to 7 minutes because I just want to answer people's questions because I feel like they're giving me money, of which it goes to charity for the most part. And I do all the things that Cameo does when you have a chance to do charity, like for weeks at a time and 50% to charity to begin with. And you know how much I'm charitable and love charity. But I take it seriously only in that I view it as a private contract in a way I never viewed a ticket buyer as a private contract with me personally.
So David Samson's on Cameo. Go ahead and search him out. He will execute all of your requests. None of them ever lapse. How quick is your response time, David, on Cameo?
I would assume hours.
Look at that.
Because this is me, right? I mean, you don't realize what you can get done in a 22-hour day.
Yeah. I do. what's your price on Cameo, if you don't mind me asking?
$45.99.
All right.
And I don't think I've had a complaint. I haven't. I enjoy it. I enjoy the one-on-one because I like answering questions. It's what we do at the end of the month with the mailbag episode on Nothing Personal or the So You Want to Talk to Samson half-baked segment each show. I like answering questions because people have really interesting, good questions every day. I just wish I could get to more, which is why last month we did 2 mailbag episodes because there were so many questions. So I like the interaction. I think Cameo is an interesting idea. I don't like the people who do 10 or 15 second responses and take the money and run. But, you know, everyone has a reputation. You try to break it if you can, right, Mike?
All right, let's hit pause on Cameo for now. Certainly more Cameo discussion coming on today's show. It's been enough. I said certainly there because I've seized on a verbal tick from this local hour so far, which is Lord knows. I might mix in a God knows and heaven knows, but Lord knows, a bit of a verbal crutch of mine, so I apologize on the front end. We will certainly talk more Cameo today. Obviously, massive sports news, and I'm really interested to get your take. We've talked some about the James Harden situation, and the dynamic in sports has changed. It used to be if you signed somebody to one of the richest contracts in sports, it was impossible to move. Now it's different in the NBA, certainly, but that player was yours for the term of the contract, and you wouldn't see what you're seeing in this Houston deal, which is James Harden, 2 years after the fact, do $50 million in the following year, forces his way out of a team that's been a contender in the Western Conference just because he doesn't want to be there, and he does stuff like, I don't know if you saw the pass that he tried to throw to John Wall, that John Wall was like, what the hell are you doing? James Harden's body is an embarrassment right now for a guy that's never been one of these great physiques at the position. What do you make of what James Harden did in forcing his way out? Is this the new reality in the NBA? And then what do you make of the deal?
So power plays have been going on forever. So in 18 years in the game, we had power plays from the beginning. Power plays are either done by agents. They're sometimes done by players. So when you're running a team, you never have the illusion that when you sign a guy long term, that that means he's with you. That means he's committed to you. There's not one contract I signed with a player where the player didn't say, I am committed to this organization. I'm committed to this city. I'm committed to this team. I'm committed to your vision. And it's all a bunch of horse hockey, right? What they're committed to is getting the most guaranteed money they can to protect against either injury or lack of performance. So just take that as a baseline. And what James Harden has done has continued the chipping away of any power that owners have to put a team together where they have a chance to let that team play. Really, you're just at the whim of your least happy superstar. And it's a level of petulance that is very dangerous to the player. And this is what is going to be discussed on today's show for me, and I'll preview it for you now, is that these players who think that they now have the power because they can get themselves traded or form a super team wherever they want, the reason why it's going to backfire if they go too far, and they're damn close to too far right now, is owners are going to say, you know what? Here's an idea. I'm not going to sign you to that long-term contract guaranteeing you that amount of money if the rules don't change and you can just become James Harden and make those bad passes or be out of shape or go to strip clubs or violate COVID protocols or make me trade Westbrook, make me bring in Wall, and then make me trade you. Forget it. And so once that happens, then there'll be that inflection point where the pendulum will balance back toward the ownership.
Brooklyn's playing a dangerous game. Dangerous game, because now their team is built, obviously, all world talents. We can argue some on Kyrie Irving and what he's doing, and I'd like to get into that with you. But you have players in Kyrie Irving, James Harden, and Kevin Durant that at moments, some cases, several moments, have flexed their power as players, have held franchises hostage. Kevin Durant obviously being the classiest individual of those three. And classy, I don't want to do that too. I don't want to apply moralities. But he's got the least bit of tarnish on his name. When you have three players that have flexed their power, and now they're coming together, and you have a first-time head coach in Steve Nash, and a general manager in Sean Marks, who's been good, no doubt. I mean, you get that haul, you're automatically good. But he's still newer in his career. This seems like a recipe for disaster to me. It's already not going well with Kyrie Irving. And reports are that Kevin Durant is already distant from Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving, everyone else in the world has learned to work remotely. It's kind of hard to do that in the NBA. He's trying to zoom into NBA games. I just don't see, obviously the talent is the argument against all of this, and Dan will probably take the side of talent today if I can just sort of predict what his take is going to be. To me, this is a recipe for disaster.
Well, you've created Frankenstein now, and the question is, at what point does Frankenstein take over this mad scientist, right? And the Nets, you know, desperation in sports is a terrible cologne. And the Nets are desperate, in my mind, because they needed to get the Kyrie Irving off the back page. That issue was crushing the Nets. And that is the impact that a superstar can have when you sign him to a max deal and all of a sudden he goes off the deep end or just stays off the deep end that you thought that you could rescue him from because you're different, you have a better organization, you're in a better city. And that is the delusion that so many owners and executives have. Hey, he was a problem there, but with us, we have a better clubhouse. We have a better structure. It's going to be fine. People are generally who they are, whether you're on the court or off the court. And I think that at the end of the day, this trade looks more like Garnett and Pierce to me than it looks like LeBron getting together with Bosh and Wade. And I think that everyone's tried to copy the Heat big three since the Heat did it. And I'm not sure that anyone has been successful.
Well, the Warriors.
No, but I don't think the Warriors are in that position.
Because they built that.
I'm not sure that that was put together through free agency the way Bosh and James joined Wade.
What,
I could be wrong, but that's not my recollection.
Right. I think you're right, because while they got a lot of crucial role players, you had two big-time marquee free agents, even though they were traded, leave their franchises for an established one that wasn't a legitimate title contender. I think they were the 5 seed the year prior. In Golden State's case, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, and Draymond Green were drafted by the organization, and they just brought the one free agent over in Kevin Durant. So I think you're right.
And they won a title, though, keep in mind, before Durant even got there.
Yeah, so it's not apples to apples. And I think you're right. No one has truly replicated. Well, let me think about this. Let me think about this for just 1 second. The Lakers, no, because they just have the two. And Cleveland had Kyrie already. Okay. I'm willing to give you that. No one has replicated it the way the Miami Heat did it.
And that's how it happens in a copycat league. We're all copycat in baseball and in basketball or in football. You see something that works and you want to do it. And the reason why something works in the beginning is because you've got a arbitrage situation with the other teams where you're doing something that other teams are not doing, like defensive shifting in baseball. The reason why it works so well in the beginning is no one else was doing it. So you had that incremental advantage. When everyone's doing the same thing, all of a sudden that incremental advantage disappears and therefore you start looking for the next new thing to do. So it feels like the Nets are like the last man on the block to try this. And it just feels like the wrong personalities. And maybe I'm just harsh on Kyrie Irving because I'm so livid with the way he acts and how assuming he is that he can do whatever he wants and the team will be fine and he can keep cashing his paychecks. I would be suspending him without pay right now.
Wow. I haven't heard that one. I heard Stephen A. Smith made news yesterday saying that Kyrie Irving should just flatly retire. you would go as far. Man, this is such an explosive situation potentially, and you just bring James Harden aboard. Many would argue now is a time for healing. I'm not echoing talking points that we're seeing on the House floor right now. To all of a sudden start suspending Kyrie Irving without pay when you bring James Harden on, knowing what a sensitive powder keg this might be with a first-time head coach, you're willing to go that far?
So I want to be clear, and this is an important point. It is not me saying that I disagree with Kyrie Irving saying there are more important things in life than basketball. I understand where we are as a country. I really do. But either you're going to be Maya Moore or you're not. But you can't have it both ways. If you feel like you need to be involved in politics, then please be involved. I want more people involved in politics. I want more people educated and spreading the word. But don't think that I'm paying you to do that. So retiring is one thing, stepping away from the team, taking a leave of absence. But you can't for one second think that you can get paid by a basketball team to go ahead and do God's work, if that's what he thinks he's doing, which he may be doing, on my nickel. Do it on your own nickel.
He continues to be a bad messenger, too, because he can speak to important things that are going on in the country, but then you can't be videotaped. You can't be cell phone recorded at a wedding dancing, doing the cha-cha. God, how old am I? Doing the cha-cha and now being someone that's putting your team at COVID risk because you break protocol.
And by the way, what Sean Marks said to me was embarrassing, and I hope he wrote that statement that he released yesterday that we covered on the show with his eyes closed and his fingers crossed, because him saying Kyrie will be back, he's gone for personal reasons, we don't know when he'll be back, and maybe he'll talk to the media when he's back, maybe he won't, that's up to Kyrie. You know, give me a break, Mike. He's got to address the situation and take charge. And we used to do things with the Marlins knowing that we'd get a grievance from the players' union. No problem. I would suspend him and I just stop paying him. Let him grieve it.
You guys were different that way.
Float. I don't care. I'm. It doesn't matter.
Well, clearly you guys didn't care in the moment, and you guys had plenty of players' union grievances, more than the average.
Yes, absolutely. And we won the overwhelming majority of them because we were willing to take a stand within the constructs of the collective bargaining agreement, which most teams won't do. And this was me maybe taking advantage of Jeffrey, because Jeffrey would never want to go against players because he never wanted to upset them. So often I would just press forward and then do the old forgiveness is easier to ask for than permission, because I wouldn't want to stand to be taken advantage of, because guess what? People in the clubhouse talk. So when you give up an advantage to a player or are negotiating with a player, they're all chirping in the clubhouse about what they're getting, what they're taking advantage of, what they got away with. Hey, I didn't show up to that community event and I didn't get in trouble. You don't have to go. You don't have to go to that teacher appreciation week because they don't care. No way. That's not how we would do it. Do you know in baseball collective bargaining agreement, there are a select number of times specified that you can have players do community things and they have to say yes. And if they don't show up, you actually get to discipline them under the collective bargaining agreement. But no teams would ever do it, but we would.
Interesting.
Because I took it very seriously. We don't ask you to do a lot, but you sure as shit better show up to what we ask you to do that is within the four corners of the collective bargaining agreement. Now, for extra stuff, we're going to pay you because otherwise you don't have to do it. Or we're going to ask you to do it, and if you say no, we're not going to be angry. But for the stuff that's required under a negotiated agreement, you better show up, because if you don't, and then you tell, and we don't care, which happens with 28 other teams, you've got a situation where they're in the clubhouse saying, hey, no worries, man.
I didn't know that.
I overslept.
I didn't know that. Now, is every player has a baseline? You have to do this. This is your requirement. Or is that number even negotiable?
No, it's the same number for every player. And you actually have to submit to the player before the season what the list of community events are that are required attendance.
Very interesting. I want to also apologize to the audience because I sounded ancient there when I had Kyrie Irving being videotaped at a wedding doing the cha-cha. I need to make the correction. Kyrie Irving was at a birthday party on a cell phone, probably doing the cha-cha slide. So I apologize to our audience out there. David, you are a Knicks fan. Brooklyn has been in Brooklyn for a while now. Well, Brooklyn's always been in Brooklyn. The Nets have been in Brooklyn for a while now. Obviously, difficult to make inroads in that market as the second team. It's always a Knicks town, despite the Knicks' lack of success on the court. Now this is a big branding play. This is a team that I think is favored in the Eastern Conference now with the addition of James Harden. It's hard to get a big branding play out there during a pandemic because no fans are in the stands. What can you tell me about the business dynamic, being a Knicks fan, what the Nets are trying to accomplish in that market? Will they ever be successful? Because for me, it seems impossible, even if they start winning titles.
They want a sliver, right? It's what the rental car companies who try to get after Avis and Hertz, right? You don't want the whole thing. You want a sliver. The cruise companies who want to go after Carnival or Royal Caribbean, you just want a tiny bit of their business. The Knicks are, if you're a Knicks fan, you're in trouble. And the reason why you're in trouble is there is no motivation for Jim Dolan to ever change the way he acts, because it's never impacted his pocketbook, ever. No matter how bad they are on the court, it doesn't impact attendance, average ticket price, corporate sponsorship level, TV revenue, network sort of value. Nothing gets impacted. The Nets are different, though, and most teams are different, where when you make a play like this, you are betting that you're willing to go to the cap, pay a luxury tax potentially, because you think that you've got enough upside to cover it. There's enough empty seats. There's enough chance for your merchandise to take a step higher toward the Knicks. And the problem is that requires winning. James Harden coming to the Nets in and of itself does not take a sliver away from the Knicks. James Harden leading the Nets to two titles in the next 4 years, where he has 2 years left, one in the next 2 years, that begins to impact the Knicks a tiny, tiny bit, but it's a little bit like a gnat on an elephant. So it's not like Dolan is sitting around worried, much like the Steinbrenner family is not shaking right now because the Mets signed James McCann and traded for Francisco Lindor.
I think I know what you're talking about because it's a long play, right? A lot of kids who I was growing up around became Bulls and Cowboys fans because they were winning the titles. And some of them moved on to other teams because they're front runners, and some of them are in their mid-30s and are still fans of the Bulls and Cowboys. You're not necessarily trying to steal Knicks fans from the New York Knicks. What you're trying to do is get the 7-year-old, the impressionable 7-year-old, to be super in, from Brooklyn probably, super in on James Harden, Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant, and what you hope to be a title run for this franchise. And boom, you got a fan for generations. What the Miami Heat have done that's so great is they've actually won a title. They've made a title run for a whole generation of children. In 2006, those fans are now adults and have kids of their own. And those kids got to see Jimmy Butler go to the finals. And they were young, impressionable kids that saw LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh make their run. And that's an international brand, because this is a different animal. That's Beatlemania with the Miami Heat. But they've had these championship runs every 8 years or so, and they keep fortifying brand new fan bases. That is sustained excellence. It's what you aspired to with the Marlins and unfortunately could never do.
Right. I mean, that's what you want. We did succeed in some ways, where many people who are Marlins fans now, their parents were not. They were in South Florida and they were transplants and came from other places and were fans of other teams. And we always said, we're trying to get their kids to be Marlins fans. So I would actually walk around the ballpark and I would seek out father-son combinations or mother-son combinations where the parents were wearing the road jersey and the kids were wearing the Marlins home jersey. Ah. That to me was Yahtzee in terms of what we were trying to do as a young franchise, which the Marlins still are. You know, you're not even 30 years old yet. So that is very similar to what you're going to see with Nets. It will be fascinating if kids of Knicks fans are allowed to be Nets fans because they say to their parents, listen, look what they're doing. I love it. We're winning. I just won a title, or I just got to the conference finals. And the thing is, in New York, to be a Nets fan instead of a Knicks fan, that is a long bridge to walk.
I wonder if you covered this on your podcast, Nothing Personal with David Sampson. Go ahead and search that. Have you seen what the NHL did with their division names?
Of course. Yeah, we did cover it. It was a fun segment. And, the Mass Mutual East Division and the Scotia Bank North Division. The NHL is desperate for money. They're absolutely getting crushed, the owners are. They have a terrible network deal. And the only reason they're playing this year is that they need to get a new TV deal next year, and they have an expansion team coming next year in the Seattle Kraken. Other than that, they would have shut down. And 2020, I think that we are forgetting, there was such a social justice rush. There was such a anti-Trump rush or a pro-Trump rush and partisanship that occupied us, the pandemic as the overarching mushroom cloud. People are forgetting that we're now just going to start to see the impact this has had on businesses and what businesses are going to do to get right. So when the cruises start going again in Miami, it's not as though you're going to get the same quality food and the services are all going to be the same. They've got to start making up the money that they lost over this year. And teams are going to be the same way. And you're seeing it with MLB free agency. This is no joke, Mikey. There's a reason why players aren't getting signed. And it's not that we're trying to show we. It's not we, it's they. It's not that they're trying to show strength to players and say, we're going to get you in the next collective bargaining agreement. No, it's them saying, I don't care what you write in the media or what you believe. We got crushed. And we are now going to pass along those losses by decreasing our expenses, and that means salaries are going down.
This season's all about mitigating losses. I think across the board for the four major sports here, it does seem as though the NHL is rumored to have a lot of interest, maybe a partial network deal. Half the season goes here, half the season goes there. I know Fox is in the game. Live TV rights. Business is still booming because it's appointment television, but the NHL find themselves, in terms of the four major sports, way back. It's interesting that you invoked what's been going on in the country, because the NHL has obviously been on the sidelines. They know their fan base, and they don't mix that at all. Even at the height of it over the summer, you had to force the league to stop play when everyone else did. There was one game going on, and then finally smart people got in the room and said, hold on, let's pause. The NHL has its fan base established, but the country is obviously changing. Joe Biden just got more votes than any presidential candidate in history. Is the NHL going to have to change its ways to attract newer customers? Because I think, much like baseball, they're starting to have an older fan base.
The number one example of what you're talking about is NASCAR, right? I mean, that to me is far bigger example than the NHL. For NASCAR to say no more Confederate flags was way more epic than the NHL saying, you know, we're going to press through. And by the way, all the leagues are trying to press through. All the businesses are trying to press through in the COVID pandemic. Are people going to change based on the country? The other side of it, though, is Trump got more votes than any other winning presidential candidate in the history. There was just more engagement. More people were voting because people felt there was more at stake. I think these next 4 years are going to be very interesting with what happens, you know, in terms of the impeachment. Obviously, I don't know if you're going to cover it on your show. I'm definitely covering it on Nothing Personal. It's fascinating to me what happened in this sort of bipartisan impeachment. It just doesn't happen ever, right? It's always Bill Clinton has sex with an intern and the Democrats say it's fine. And whether it is fine or not, I'm not opining, but it was straight down the line, right? What happened when you start?
Well, I think the objection, not to do revisionist history, because a lot of people flippantly say that was it. It was the lying about it.
The perjury is, well, that was the impeachable offense.
Yeah.
Right. But what they were judging him on was not.
Oh, yeah. It was a morality play.
It was morality. Of course, every Democrat back then knew that he perjured. He purged. Is it purged himself? I think that's when you throw up. It's perjured himself, I think. This is when I need Coca. Coca, is it? He perjured himself?
I think he perjured himself. Yeah, perjured himself. Thank you, Chris Whittingham.
That is the issue that was supposed to be under consideration by the Senate, right, with Clinton. But in fact, what they were doing was saying, no, it's all good. What happened with Monica, it is what it is. Let's move on. We're not going to give the Republicans this. But we're just seeing a sea change in the country. Wait to see what impact it has, because businesses have to adjust. And the way businesses adjust is they look at their revenue. And so, like, if we can just bring it back to the NHL for 1 second, the way you get a TV deal in major sports is you put on a piece of paper your entire menu of what you have to offer. So the NHL puts every regular season game, every playoff series, they know the exact number of games, and then they go out and they sell it and they put the pieces together. All the networks do this. The NFL does it. They combine NBC and ESPN and ABC and Fox, MLB, Turner, ESPN, Fox, MLB Network. So what the NHL is doing is very normal. You keep selling until you literally have nothing else to sell.
Like Sugats with Cameo. If I may.
No, definitely not. Because the equivalent of that would be getting rights fees from ESPN and deciding not to play the games.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, scoundrel.
That doesn't work very
if
well.
I may speak to the audience just a bit as an aside, totally. It's weird given where we were. We're still trying to figure out what we are as this independent pirate ship. And you have to afford us the fact that Dan's been waiting to do these shows for 15 years. And coincidentally, the first week of freedom, we see something we've never seen, which was a siege on our freedom. The beacon of democracy in this country was attacked by right-wing terrorists. And they're our neighbors. There are people that we see every day. So obviously those shows were lacking in sports and more centrally focused on one thing. We're going to get the balance right. This is not Mike saying more sports, but perhaps a dash, and you'll get that today in the Big Suey. Amin El Hassan's going to explain to us this big trade in the NBA, but we're going to find our voice. We're going to find our voice, afford us that. The feedback has been really good. If we can nitpick on one thing, it's the fact that we're a sports show, technically, and haven't really talked sports. We'll get the balance right. Afford us that opportunity, and thank you for your patience.
Do I need to be here for this?
No, I just took the opportunity because I really don't have those opportunities to just carve out. We don't have built-in breaks, so the hours are not as diverse as they once were on our show because every commercial break, we just sort of reset and do a different topic. Now hours are more driven on one topic. So we'll figure that out as well. And this is my only opportunity to say that, David. So thank you for your patience. One last sports question before we get into your review. Let's be quick with this one because I don't know how much you have on it and I really want to talk to you about movies. We haven't done that in a while. The Cleveland Browns, obviously, defeated the Pittsburgh Steelers. First road playoff win since, I believe, 1969. First playoff win as me, a Cleveland Browns fan. First Cleveland Browns playoff win since I was 7 years old. Dumb and Dumber was the number one movie in America at the time. I love Dumb and Dumber. I think you do too, David. Absolute classic.
All-timer.
Yeah, absolute classic.
All-timer.
Juju Smith-Schuster is an interesting case study because, Juju Smith-Schuster is this player that is more famous than his productivity suggests. He's now playing slot receiver for Pittsburgh. Credit to him, he actually had a good game against Cleveland, but he hasn't had a good season. He's an unrestricted free agent. Steelers do such a great job developing young wide receivers. And it seems as though every time there's an embarrassing loss by the Pittsburgh Steelers, it's usually preceded by Juju Smith-Schuster talking all sorts of shit and giving bulletin board material, which I think even you would agree is overstated. However, after a frustrating loss like that, the fans don't direct their ire to Ben Roethlisberger, who had, I think, 4 turnovers in that game. It's all about Juju Smith-Schuster because he was talking loads of shit and it bit him in the ass. So if you have a player like Juju Smith-Schuster who can't say off of social media, you had something like this with Logan Morrison, but he wasn't considered what Juju Smith-Schuster was. He keeps doing this week in, week out. He finally stops dancing on opposing teams' 50-yard line, but then he won't get out of his own way and say stupid shit like Browns is Browns in a preview to that game. How do you handle this Juju Smith-Schuster? Do you even bring him back as an unrestricted free agent? Because it's a bit of a headache.
It's a juice squeeze situation, right? Very simply. And I hate to admit it, but it really is true. We had these with many players who we had major issues with what they would do off the field, with the things that they would say. Now, bulletin board material is a funny thing. Jordan, during The Last Dance, showed fans that to him, he created his own billboard. That's not
bulletin board.
It's called bulletin board. Godly. That Jordan would create his own bulletin board material to sort of self-motivate him. Inside a clubhouse, there is no talk of bulletin board material. It does not exist in real life.
In your clubhouse, did you actually have a bulletin board?
Yes, okay. Absolutely. Now, when in Marlins Park, the billboard was replaced by a video monitor where you could type and it would appear what the schedule is, what BP times are, who's in the group for BP, and it was a rolling monitor. That's just technology. In the old days, it was a straight bulletin board with the markers that you write on and then would get erased at the end of the game.
In your Marlins clubhouse bulletin board, did you ever put opposing fans, players, media, Never. Talking shit about your team?
Never. That's what I'm saying. It's totally overstated. It's great for the media to talk about. It's fun. It provides content and segments. But for athletes inside the clubhouse, when we're talking about the opponent, the game, the situation, the series, never would come up. Literally no one cares inside sports.
God, the theater of the mind, though, of Kevin Stefanski, not in this case because he had COVID, just taking a thumbtack and putting an old school newspaper clipping on a board makes me feel like that pushed the Browns to victory.
No, but that's the point, right? That's the Disney part. Oh my God, that's a fine for me, right? I'm not even allowed to say Disney.
You're allowed to say Disney. Just don't say anything bad about Disney.
Oh, we're still in that period. We're still in the quiet period. The post-contract quiet period.
We're just,
can't say anything
bad. We're very thankful for our time over there.
Hold on. Get the script out. We are very thankful for our time at the Disney Corporation. We would like to thank everyone who helped the show become what it is. I'm not supposed to say that.
I know what you're doing, and I would just like to go on the record and say I disapprove of your sarcastic tone in regards to our former employer.
It must be hard to go to bed at night for you, right? Like, you're the anti-Sugats.
Yeah, because Dan's always texting me at 3 a.m. about Sugats not fulfilling cameos.
So getting back to Juju, I would just say that if the juice is no longer worth the squeeze, with him it's not, you don't bring him back. It's just for a good player, we let good players get away with stuff until they're not good anymore.
Yeah.
And we'll let you know when you're not good. We're not going to listen to the fans or the media. We'll decide when the player's not good. And if the behavior's so bad, there's only been a very few circumstances where a good player would be so bad that we would be willing to get rid of that good player.
Let's talk reviews. Back to this. We couldn't do it last week because I don't know if you were watching the news. Things took precedent over it. Let's get your review of the week. David Sampson, a big cinephile, watches several movies a day. It would appear
one movie a day.
But that's a lot. That's an incredible intake for David Sampson. Seven films at least a week that you're consuming. So what is it that you have for our audience in terms of a review this week?
So this now shows the audience that we don't rehearse. Like, we just get on every Thursday and just talk. I'm not doing a movie today. I'm doing a TV series.
Okay, cool.
And the TV series I'm doing is The History of Swear Words with our guy Nicolas Cage.
Oh, no. I hear this is bad.
Oh, my God. So the show opens with Nicolas Cage sitting in a black suit, black tie, legs crossed, lace-up shoes.
Jet black hair.
Dyed beard, dyed hair, and he is acting like he is hosting a PBS special.
Mm-hmm.
And he starts dropping swear words as part of it because that's what the show is. There's 26 20-minute shows on six swear words. I think it's, can we say them?
You can say every word but the F word.
Okay, so it's the F word.
And I don't like the B word. Don't do the B word.
And then they go to the S word, the C word, but not the really horrible C word, the one that is a male body part.
Hmm.
And they go on and on six times, including damn as a swear word. They go into the etymology. They've got people seriously being interviewed. They've got word people who do for a living tell you where these words come from. And then they have movie clips sort of in there using these words, the best example of words. Jonah Hill, by the way, little known fact that I learned from the history of swear words. Spoiler alert, Jonah Hill is the movie star who's used the F word more than any other movie star. And that's because of Wolf of Wall Street, which was all about Jonah and the F word. But to me, I never even think about that. I associate Jonah Hill with the Quaalude incident.
Yeah.
Much more so.
Great scene.
The F word.
Oh, great scene. One of the best physical comedy performances I've ever witnessed. By
both actors, including DiCaprio, trying to get down the stairs.
It has me roll. I watched that. I went to the film and I watched that scene. I was just hanging around. It was on like AMC and I was just waiting around for that scene. It was just so brilliant. I was howling in the movie theater. It's one of the few times it takes me back to where I was when I first saw that scene. It was just so unexpected, the comedic brilliance of it.
I'm with you, and I will not watch The Wolf of Wall Street edited. And so I can't believe that you would. That is a
I was just critical, hanging around. I was hanging around for the scene.
Yeah, but I'm hanging around for the scene, but not quite that scene.
Yeah.
So in any case, I would tell you that when it comes, by the way, I have no idea what we were just talking about.
History of swear words, which I hear. Oh,
so Nicolas Cage.
Yeah.
All I kept thinking during the history of swear words is that he needed a paycheck.
I mean,
that was in my head.
I mean, that's sort of the deal with Nicolas Cage. And you just sort of hope that it's good. From what I've heard, this one isn't good. That Nicolas Cage is actually the least of the show's problems. That you actually wish for more Nicolas Cage, but what you get is sort of B-list, C-list comedians trying to be funny.
I'd never heard of any of them except Sarah Silverman and Nick Offerman, I know, as I'd heard of as well from We're the Millers and other things that I've seen him in, including the movie where he plays the musician father of his daughter and they make great music together, which is a great Nick Offerman movie, which I can't remember. It was a very small independent film, what it's called, but I think I reviewed it. I didn't buy in it, but it was only 2 hours of my life. So it's 3 20-minute episodes. And I did learn a few things about where the words come from and going back thousands of years and what they actually mean, what their Latin derivatives are. But for Nicolas Cage, when this was promoted, I thought this was going to be an epic series because Netflix was promoting it like this was a major creative, brilliant event. And it turns out to be absolute horse hockey.
Cheap laughs.
Not even a laugh.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's disappointing.
It was dumpster fire for me, but I couldn't stop because I knew I wanted to see it through. I owed it to Nicolas Cage because of what he's done for me. I'm disappointed he feels he has to dye his hair and his beard. I'm disappointed that he has to do this show, but it is what it is, right?
Well, it's not even real hair up top, unfortunately, for Nick.
No. That's a toupee?
I mean, come on.
That's the first I've heard of that.
Come on. His hairline keeps moving. It's sort of like John Travolta. Thank God John Travolta just embraced the fact that he was bald. Because how does the hairline keep moving backwards and then forward? That's just not the way that this is supposed to go.
Well, doesn't LeBron's hairline do that?
He puts in like certain hair coloring. Nicolas Cage has absolutely gotten plugs. No doubt about it. No doubt about it. And he dyes the plugs to an absurd... it's the blackest of black. There are parts of the universe that aren't as dark as the shade in Nicolas Cage's beard. Now's a part of the show where I actually give you a couple of recommendations. We can have some banter, but the star of the local hours with David Sampson is obviously his review. Don't Watch Away on Netflix. Terrible. Terrible show with Hilary Swank. I hope there's no season 2. I sat through 10 episodes. Garbage.
I stopped after one, Mikey. I should have mentioned to you. Ooh, it was so bad. I couldn't do it. One terrible episode, and I rarely quit, but I quit.
Terrible. Why would Hilary Swank sign on to do this? I'm probably extending her some more credit than I should. She used to make good choices. Not so much when you look on the IMDb. You get a treetop view on that thing. But please watch Disclosure on Netflix. Disclosure, not Michael Douglas and Demi Moore's sexual thriller in the Pacific Northwest. No,
I loved, by the way.
It's a great movie. Are you kidding me? Demi Moore, loved. Baby. Disclosure is about transphobia and Hollywood's role in perpetuating this transphobia. It is so insightful. I was on the edge of my seat. It was one of the more educational experiences I've ever had watching a documentary. It was fascinating. Laverne Cox, she is a brilliant spokesperson for her causes. She can explain things to you coming from a level of understanding and while also being able to project the trauma that these specific moments in cinematic history gave her and people like her. It was a fascinating watch, really well done. Please, please watch Disclosure. Don't be ashamed.
It's guaranteed.
Don't be ashamed.
We'll review it next week.
Do not be ashamed of your level of education on the matter. Go into this with an open mind. Go into it looking to learn because you will, and you will realize this is why we have diverse programs. This is why representation is so important because, look, I was a little kid laughing at Ace Ventura when he was doing the parody of The Crying Game and putting the plunger in his mouth. And I had no idea how traumatic that is for someone going through something in that very moment in time while you have an audience, a theater full of people laughing at what is your trauma. So it is just so well done. And I cannot give this a better recommendation right now in terms of documentaries available to you on streaming platforms. Seek this out.
Before you whip yourself, Mikey, I would say that humor in general, going back to the early days from Eddie Murphy, Richard Pryor, you know, back to Abbott and Costello up to now, humor is generally based on the expense of someone. on some group, on some person.
Totally.
And every time you're laughing because it's not you, or you're laughing because it is you and that you're sort of embarrassed by it or you're embracing that. So I wouldn't say that that is, you know, what Jim Carrey was doing. And I look back at some of the movies of the 80s and 90s and we say, oh my God, it's so politically incorrect. But the reality is that people will look back at movies of this time period and say the same thing. That's just the nature of humor. So don't make yourself crazy that you laughed at Ace Ventura.
Oh, I'm not. In fact, I think Ace Ventura is probably the flimsiest example, because what happened in Ace Ventura was more of a parody on The Crying Game. And they actually dive into The Crying Game and the big twist ending in The Crying Game. So I kind of felt like if they were unfair, maybe it was just because I was... Ace Ventura was such a great film experience for me when I was young. Maybe that's what I was experiencing, but I thought it was one of the flimsier examples. But all in all, I learned so much about the subject matter. Please watch this. David Sampson, thank you so much. Really enjoyed doing this local hour with you and talking about the con artist that is Stugatz at the top. Nice little organic banter. Stugatz just sat down, by the way. Dan, you want to give the people a preview of what is coming up here?
On the show today?
Yeah, I know we have the Big Suey with Amin El-Hassan to break down the big NBA trade.
I think that we might have a content farm of me and Stugatz fighting over some of the cameo stuff that has happened. I believe that is going to be in play today. I have had to offer a 4 a.m. 90-minute email of apology to Stugatz because my timing wasn't great at castigating him for not filling up some of those cameo requests that have some of the listeners mad at us. So I feel like we've got a content farm there.
I know what's happening here. Keep in mind, 7 days. Something just came up after the fact. All right?
We can discuss it later. Stugatz and I have a great marriage, okay? We both understand what each other's weaknesses are. I don't think I'm speaking for Stugatz when I say that we have a great marriage, and I felt the need to apologize to him last night profusely. It doesn't mean that he wasn't wrong. I just am also wrong, and so we could be wrong together on air.
Well, what kind of debate is that? It's both things?
Two wrongs make a right.
Wait, was that Stu on the local hour with me? Hello,
hi, David.
Stu.
He's been here the whole time.
You?
He's been here the whole time.
I'm here every week, Dave.
Well, I miss your voice.
No, you don't.
And by the way, thank you for not doing my cameo request. And I don't know who to use the credit on, so that was nice.
Well, here's the thing with the credit. If you really care about your money and poke around just a little bit, you'll realize you can get your money back. I mean,
yeah. Well, we covered that it's for what you originally paid for, and now your price has tripled.
Right.
And so thank you for my $39.99 back. I can't afford your $150.
Yeah, well, I haven't missed anyone who paid $150. Okay.
Yeah, I
not
know.
Yet.
I think
more than cameo, I think what people have to look forward to is we are now embedded in sort of the problem areas where relationships get threatened because you're in negotiations and you're a rock band and everyone thinks that they have a value and everyone wants to respect what everyone else's value is. And I feel showing the audience some of that, like me and Stugatz, in negotiations, not with each other, but just at a time that's really fun for our show. And Stugatz and I are the only ones who have been here since the beginning. And he reminded me of that yesterday in the middle. He took my 4 a.m. weakness to remind me of the fact that he and I are the only ones who have been here since the beginning.
In fairness to me, I sent it at like 10:30 right before I went to bed. Mm-hmm. You decided to read it and respond at 4 a.m. And I just want your respect.
Listen.
I trust you. I've told you that 1,000 times. I took a blind leap with you here.
Everyone did.
Stage, I just want your goddamn respect for once, man.
Okay, so...
Do you remember the Almost Famous t-shirt? The scene in Almost Famous when the t-shirt gets brought out by...
and all the other band members are faded.
And all the band members are in the background.
Yeah.
And there's Billy Crudup. That's what's going to happen. So be careful there, Stu, because when the t-shirt comes out and the press release comes out, it's going to be Dan Le Batard in a big font. And your font is going to be teeny tiny.
This is not going to be fun because...
That's been 20 years, Dave.
Samson. Okay? You're not helping matters here.
Dave, every day I wake up and I say, am I going to be in the picture today?
Oh, Jesus.
I have no idea.
Great. So here it's Vintage Stugatz turning it on us. And I know reason. And he's going to be on top of that defensive, so we can't do the good content with it.
Let me say this. What I did to some of those listeners on Cameo was wrong. And Dan's timing was not bad. I did that 2 days ago, okay? Maybe three. I feel bad. The fact that you guys don't trust me at this point to know that I feel bad and know I'll try to fix it for our listeners is what upset me yesterday because I was in an emotional state. Mm. That's it. Usually, Dan knows this. I would have let that brush right off. Mm. You think I give a shit? I didn't know that the C in cameo stands for cops. I mean, Jesus Christ. And then the two of you, I mean, my every move, I'm sorry. I did them for free. And you should be sorry to me, you, the listeners,
oh,
30
no.
guys on Reddit,
oh, no.
okay,
oh, no.
who now feel
oh,
bad
no. Oh, no.
because I did it for free,
oh, no.
and you made up a bunch of BS on Reddit to try to get Dan and Mike going, and guess what? It worked, you assholes.
So anyways, it'll be good content.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.